Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I'm joined by returning guest Matt Boisvert. Matt is an artist, an author, an energy healer. What else are you, Matt? What aren't you, Matt?
Mechanic. I'm not a mechanic.
Me neither, man. We need a mechanic.
My day job is I'm actually a children's performer full time now. So I go and I go to daycares and preschools, and I bring the joy of singing to kids. And it's been the best turn in my life thus far. You know, I've always been people always saw me I've often been described as a leaf in a wind, you know, like floating around like aimlessly. But I realized recently that I'm actually a little more like an arrow shot from a far distance.
Nice.
So I just seem like a leaf. That might be the most Sagittarian thing I've ever said. Yeah. Other than, you know, boobs. I love boobs. And so I love being older because you can see all the things that just made you look to other people like you just didn't know what you were doing. You were all over the place. And then when you get older, you can see how that was actually all a straight line exactly to the thing that I've been heading towards my whole life. And before the show, I was asking you if you had heard that one speech that was given recently. And because I don't know American politics very well, I don't remember his name. But he was speaking at, I believe it was a Catholic school graduation. And he was just talking to people, and everyone got really upset about the one thing he said, which was his wife was a homemaker, and that allowed him to do what he could do with his life. And it was like, he talked about how that was a perfect balance, and it made their home and his life. He was only able to do what he could do with his life because his wife, you know, took care of the homestead. He's also being criticized because he talks about the need of fathers in the house, right? But the one thing he said that stuck with me, and it really stuck with me, and it bugged me at first, and then I realized it was bugging me because it was super true, was he was talking about leaning into your vocation, and that it might not necessarily, the vocation that you are naturally good at is not necessarily the vocation that you are interested in, want to go into. But sometimes if you just can lean into the vocation that you are naturally adept for, that then you are expressing that you are honoring God. Is essentially what he said. And you could sub that for anything else. You could sub it for, then you're honoring the divine, you're honoring, you know, source or whatever kind of, you know, language you use to describe the oneness of everything. And it really stuck with me because my whole life, everyone was just like, you need to be a children's entertainer. When are you going to put out your children's album? Oh, you should sing for kids. And I was I just wanted to be a serious artist. You know, I'm watching gritty film and I'm writing like gritty things and like dark stuff. And it turns out the only people who really take me seriously as a musician are children. So when I leaned into it, it was just instant success. It's so funny. You struggle my whole life struggling as an artist. And finally I just went, okay, I'll just lean into this thing that everyone's been pushing me towards my whole life that I am very naturally good at. Kids are just attracted to me. I don't know. There's something about me that kids just look and they're like, hey, that guy's trustworthy. And they come and talk to me. They like hug me and stuff. And so I just leaned into it and instant success. I was busy all the time. I'm making like better money than I ever made doing like full-time work as an ECE. So that's like working in childcare and preschools and stuff. And I'm in love with it. The only thing I'm missing is I don't really have coworkers anymore. So when I run into other adults, I kind of run off at the mouth a bit like an excited puppy. So, but the money's good and the work is fantastic. And I can see that what I'm doing is actually very, very important. There's something about singing, and I just came across this recently, and I can't remember where it was, but it was talking about how there are some musical tones and some melodies that actually are activation keys that activate different aspects and different energetic waves within people. And when I read that, I was like, that is exactly what I do for a living. Now I can see it when I'm singing with infants and toddlers and preschoolers. You can see this light suddenly click on in their eyes. And it's suddenly like there's a little fire behind the eyes that wasn't quite there before, a little twinkle. And it's, I don't know if it's just like I'm giving them the joy of art or helping them lean into, you know, music, or just, you know, living more childlike. But whatever it is I'm doing, it's working really well for me, for my house, and for the kids that I work with. And so I'm just becoming more and more successful with it. Yeah. And I kind of had a path come up recently where I had an opportunity to maybe take over the clinic where I work out of for my healing stuff. So where I do my Reiki and biofield tuning and meditation consultation. And I was really, really serious about it. I went through all the years of paperwork with that they had. And, you know, I went through everything. I was building trends of, like, you know, income trends and, you know, assets. And I went through everything, and I went deep, deep, deep into it. And then finally, I just got to the point where I just couldn't tell. I didn't know what to do. And my wife was like, I'm not sure either. So I just said to my guy, you know, spirits, I was like, all right, spirit team, like, give me a sign. Like, I'm not going to look at the paperwork for a few days. Just give me some sort of indication if this is the direction I should go. Well, the next 3 days, I got like what can only really be described, and this is really pretentious, but like a download. And I got 8 new Mr. Matt songs in 3 days, which is sometimes this happens to me a lot. And Mel and I have kind of pinpointed it astrologically for when I have Venus returns. Anytime I have a Venus return, I suddenly have this huge burst of creativity, and I'll often write like 3 full songs and record, like, it'll just 3 finished songs will just pop out in a couple of days. And then I kind of have to wait for another in download. But this one was nuts. I got 8 songs in 3 days. And then the next week, my grandfather passed, and then I got another couple songs. And so I had a couple songs. I was working on an album, but after about a week since I asked my guides, I now had a 15 song album, and they're great. And I've been playing them for kids, and they love them. And so I kind of took that as my sign, you know, like you can't just ask for the guidance and then not accept it when it's get you. Like you have to keep your eyes open when you do those things. It's the same when you're doing manifestation in general, because that's where a lot of people mess themselves up, is they'll be working towards a manifesting something, but they'll be so hyper-specific about what it is that they expect to be the outcome, that when the door actually opens for what they really are wanting, they miss it because they're not looking for it.
So interesting that you mentioned that, because just last night, and it'll be out by the time this one comes out, I was talking to Ivy Bromius about a very similar thing. And I was talking about how, while I was on the road, I was doing a bunch of magic. And it's like it didn't really have anywhere to land.
Mm.
So I'm just kind of like, it's bunged up almost. You know what I mean? Like there's like a pressure building. And then when I got home, it like
had a massive
all went like
magic dump.
Yes, man. A massive magic movement. A triple M. It's not a BM, it's a triple M.
It's a triple M.
And so, you know, obviously like that is really one thing that's nice about that is that it shows me where the desire actually is, you know, because it's like those are the parts of my life that are flourishing when that stuff hits. But it also shows me kind of that it's always working. It's just, it might not be working in the way that I'm expecting it to work, and that my limiting belief of how it's supposed to work is really like, it doesn't help my experience at all. Like,
well, you nailed it in your description right there. You called it a limiting belief.
Yeah.
So it's always happening all the time. And what's funny is I have succeeded in my magic a lot, but thought that I wasn't.
Right.
Because in my mind, I was manifesting being a famous, you know, rocks. I was going to be like the next Tool. We're going to be huge and edgy, and people are going to be like, oh, they're so mysterious and cool. But that wasn't ever really what was happening. But everything that was happening was shifting me, just shifting the pieces around to make this perfect line towards being Mr. Matt, which is what I do now. And I am a famous singer. It's just hyper-localized, and it's a very specific age group.
Yeah.
I love it. Now, ironically, what has also happened at the same time as this is my old band. So a few years ago, I re-released our one EP that we managed to actually get finished and out. And it's missing a lot of the songs that people loved. But I mean, we did it. So I re-released it and I added a couple demo tracks on it and stuff. You know, I thought, oh, I'll stick it back online, because initially when it came out, you had to pay monthly to have it out there. And it was like $8 a month. So if somebody wasn't buying one album a month, I was losing money. So I lost money. And then they changed that the way that, because everything went digital, they changed the methods. And so you could actually do a single payment for a release that would go everywhere. You just have to go through a distribution company, and it's much more efficient and it's much more cost effective. So I put it out there. I was like, ah, cool, whatever. And, you know, I don't really check in or anything. And then I have three. What am I thinking? I have three solo albums out there now as well. And I get hit. Some people listen maybe a couple of times. It's like, you've had one listener this week. And then I get stuff from the equations, and the equation's like, you have 300 listeners this month. And I was like, is this a mistake? Like, what the hell? And so suddenly now while I'm having success being a children's performer, this old album of mine is actually, well, not mine. It was a group, right? It was a band. But that one has a bunch of listens now. It still doesn't really translate to anything more than like $2 or $3, because Spotify pays you, you know, pennies, right? which is kind of ironic, because you can't even get pennies in Canada anymore. So it's really interesting that is having a weird moment. And now at the same time as I'm having success with this other career.
I think that says a lot about the energy of attraction. And it doesn't have like, because
just to throw in one thing there, yeah. I actually started using the term resonance instead, simply because attraction doesn't describe it as well as resonance. And also attraction really got co-opted by the people who misunderstood it. So like when The Secret came out, you know, there's Believe and then The Secret. Yeah. And then it was all Law of Attraction. And a lot of the people who, when Oprah took over Law of Attraction, then it just sort of, people just didn't understand what they were doing. I had like an aunt who discovered Law of Attraction. And then so she just started treating everyone like garbage and became really selfish. So she like divorced her husband, had an affair, joined like Fortune 500 company, was trying to get everyone into multi-level marketing things and stuff like that. And a lot of people did do that. Like they just misunderstood it. I'm not sure how it was translated, but they understood the law of attraction as, oh, I just need to be really selfish, and that's how I'm going to get what I need. So when I discovered that it was kind of being rebranded as law of resonance, it actually makes a lot more sense, because it's more along the lines of vibration, which is right in my field, because for me, everything's sound, everything's vibrating, light, color, everything's vibration. Our whole existence is vibration. And then on top of that, there is things like sympathetic vibration. So it's a wonderful actual physical thing that you can see. So if you're playing a note, sympathetic vibration, I can have one of my guitars hanging on the wall. And if I hit the right note that is in the same tune as one of the strings, the string in the across the room will actually start vibrating, and it'll start making a sound too. And so that I feel is a much better description of law of attraction, because law of attraction, you think, if I act like this, then things come towards me like a magnet. But the law of resonance is just like, if I vibrate at this level, other things that vibrate at this level will notice me from afar and will start to resonate with me. So even if it's not coming to me necessarily, we are starting to resonate together.
That's good. That's, I like that a lot. And that is much more an abundant model. Like that captures the abundance too, right? Because it's not like,
it's less of mine now.
Yeah.
And more of ours.
Yeah. It's an endless, sort of wellspring, as opposed to right, just like a magnet pulling things to me. I like that. I dig that actually. Yeah. Resonance.
It's kind of like, it's just a more energetic way of describing it. I feel like law of attraction just became so hyper materialistic. It became so physicalized that people just fell into that. And then there's like,
if you really understand it, it's what you're describing, but that's just a better way to describe it. What you're saying. Like,
Yeah. And so when I came across that it was kind of being rebranded by some people as that, I was like, yeah, that's way, way more spot on. Energetically, it makes a lot more sense.
And the way it works, right? Because it's like, what I was going to say originally was like, if I'm vibrating at this level or wherever I'm at, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like if the thing is like, apparently related. So like the example that you were giving was like, you were experiencing this abundance in one area, and then all of a sudden it like seeps into this other area that you didn't really even see the two being connected, but for some reason like you started getting more listens, and it's like you resonated here, and then these other places that don't seem to be outright connected, but if you're resonating the same, those things are going to like, the abundance flows there too.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right?
You're describing the string on the guitar hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm maybe not noticing. That's not what I'm expecting. I'm just doing something. But then suddenly that starts vibrating because it's responding to what's going on, but that's not really what I expected. So now I'm going to talk about sigil work just a little.
Yeah, please.
Because I mean, I haven't done a batch in a while, but I did a massive batch. I guess it would be like 2 years ago now. And so I was still in between. I had, I ran a daycare with my parents for like 20 years and then they retired. And then I was kind of hopping around trying to find somewhere to work for a little while. I worked at a farm and I was running the tours. And then the lady gave me shit because I wasn't, her literal words were, "You're not utilizing enough child labor. The kids are here and I have plants that need to go in the ground. So use them." And I was like, so I left. So I left that. And then I was just like, I had no idea where I was going to go or what I was going to do. I kind of ended up, I was subbing at this preschool. And so I was like, okay, well, here we go. But I decided to cast a big batch of sigils. And how I do my sigil work is I make a whole bunch of small cards on like cardstock. And I'm like a ton. I just rip a whole bunch of paper. And then I plop something in my headphones, either something relaxing or esoteric, something just makes my mind sort of shut off, because you know that's a key to working with sigil work, is you kind of want boredom. It's almost like remote viewing, where you want to sort of have your brain stop thinking about what you're actually doing and not care, so you can kind of get out of that and move more into a different state. And then as I'm doing breath work and building up energy, I'm just ripping through and I just go sentence and I make a sentence, you know, boil it down. And a lot of people take a long time to build theirs. That doesn't work super great for me. What works well for me is I have the sentence, I break it down, I break it down, I break it down. I have a symbol, I put the symbol on the card with a nice, you know, ink. And then I slap it in the box with the rest. And I do like 20 or so. Now I always will throw in a robo fish. I think that's a rune soup term, where that originally came from. Because damn, does that work well? And for any listeners who don't know what a robo fish is, when you're doing chaos magic work or sigil work, though you probably all do, that's where you want to have something that's like a guaranteed thing that you are going to have happen to you, that you already know is something that's going to happen, because it helps. It just takes that whole batch and it nudges it a little bit more and makes it a little bit more likely that everything you've put in this batch is going to happen. So that time I knew I had to go to a family thing a few hours away. So I was like, oh, I'm going to drive to Stettler on the weekend. Right. And my wife was like, oh, what if something happened? We couldn't. So I was like, well, I guess my batch would have been, but you know, we did. So it worked out well. And I threw a whole bunch of things in there. And what's funny is that only the other day, and so this is a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years ago. Only the other day did I realize how many things from that batch actually came true. And they totally landed. Just wasn't in a way I expected, like we were just talking about. And like, it was things like I was like, I'm going to say, I want to make $100 an hour. And I'm like, and that's absurd. I don't know how that's ever going to happen. And I don't know, whatever. I just want to put some ridiculous things down there. I make $100 an hour now. It's, wow. Which is bizarre. And I picked the number arbitrarily. I was like, okay, I'll do $50 for a half hour thing, cause that seems reasonable. 20. And then if they want to do an hour, yeah, I can do $100. That's just my rate now, because it works for me, because what I do is very intense. If you can't sing for 8 hours, right? So I have to try and it's very exhausting. So I want to try and cram in my day's wage into like a 3 or 4 hour slot if I can, because, you know, that works a lot better. So like that one landed. Enjoying my like work was another one that I had put in there, and like that one landed great. Geez, there was a whole bunch that I just realized that I was just like, wow, these things all totally landed. Like that was a really, really good batch of sigils that I did. And then, you know, of course I put them up and I don't know what any of them are. And for my thing, for what I do is I put them up on my board in my office. And then I would sit, and every once in a while I'd come and stare at them, do a little meditation on them. And then I would turn them all a couple times, so then they look different even.
Oh, I like that.
Because you don't want to. And then that also tells me how many times I've done it, because a little pinhole. So after I did 3 meditations on each one, I'd throw them in a different box. And they're like my cast off box, because I'm like, they energetically, usually they feel like, oh, that's done. So that's either happening or it's never going to happen. But for now, I shouldn't be looking at that card anymore anyways. And then I cast those off. But yeah, it was a really, really good batch. And it's just one of those things where it's the actual magic that you're doing, and Hollywood has everyone just totally confused about this. Actual magic you do takes a long time to actually show up, usually. There's not a lot of magic that you do where boom, suddenly now something is happening right now. And when that does happen, that's why everyone gets so excited, and everyone's chatting on Discord and like, let's sharing. Oh my God, this thing happened, and it happened right away. Because most of the magic that we're doing, especially if we have any sort of grand things, or we're thinking about our life or larger scale things, it takes time. And then what sucks is if we can't hold on to that in that time, then we can actually start to manifest things that go against it. Right. So as that time period between casting and then the actual physical showing up of the magic that we're manifesting, we can fuck it up by suddenly being like, oh, this isn't happening, it's not happening, or blah, blah, blah. And then we start to fall into a different pattern of thinking, which actually starts to make what was coming to fruition disappear. So it can be really hard if you don't keep in mind that the things that you're working on are likely going to take time, and are usually going to show up in a way you were not expecting them to show up. Yeah.
Nice. That's good. Cause I wanted to talk a little bit about the firing of sigils, and you covered that too. I was going to say, you know, you talk about the robo fish. I've been experimenting with what I call a merit fish, and it is, ooh.
I like that better, because I kind of hate the whole where robo fish comes from.
This is, well, it's because it's not quite the same, right? So this is where you throw one in for someone else.
Oh, I was just going to, okay, I'm so glad that you brought this up, because that was something merit, I wanted to bring up too.
Dedicate the merit from that to the whole launch of all the rest of them, so that the merit from that sigil kind of, and this is just something I'm experimenting with now. I think I've done it once. I got another batch coming. There's one in there I'm going to do. So, but my idea, you know, and this is from working with the Thai stuff, and the idea of merit, like using, like doing good things. And for anyone out there that doesn't know what it is, it's just doing something good for someone else, and then dedicating the energy of that to a spirit or an idea even, you know?
Yeah. I threw a ton in there. In that same batch that you were talking about, a bunch of them were not about me at all. Sweet. There was a whole bunch that were like, you know, from my wife and her work, and like my daughter and, you know, friends, and she was starting school. And so, you know, just different support. Like they are happy and enjoy their school life, or my wife has coworkers who she likes and can talk to, and things like that. And I actually threw a ton in there. And the reason I did it was because I had just come off of doing a whole bunch of Silva method stuff. I had just gone through a course and I was just doing a bunch of extra reading. And one of the really fundamental things in the Silva method, when you are picturing your problems you want to solve and you're picturing things and you're sending, was we talked about this recently. And this is the method where you picture a screen when you're like going to bed and you have your three screens and time goes left, right? So the future is actually left and the past is on the right. It's a little different. And then once you have visualized everything, you pass it up, right? Because most of the things I do is visualization. But one of the key things in doing Silva method, which they point out this almost always makes it work better, is the merit thing that you were just discussing. It's when you visualize, okay, so if it's a problem that sucks for me, if you can visualize how it affects other people and then how the solution is going to benefit other people, if you can really visualize how my mom's going to be happier and she's going to be more relaxed and my kid's going to be happier and they're going to have a good time and they're going to flourish and my wife is going to be ecstatic and she'll sleep better. And you can just picture all those details of how what happens to you is going to domino effect to help all these other people. That, according to Silva method, like cranks it up like 100% and just makes it work so much better. And it's exactly what you were just saying. And I've totally experienced this too. Mel and I were recently talking about this, about charity. I haven't listened to her podcast with you yet. It just came out the other day, but she probably brought it up there because we've been talking about that a lot. So she used the word charity, used the word merit. And I, you know, across the board, it's literally just being selfless or thinking of other people. Because a lot of people, when you say selfless, they think martyrdom.
Right, right.
Or sacrifice, or you have to lose something. Maybe because it's selfless. I don't know. People don't understand English, maybe. But
well, because people have been browbeaten into a scarcity mindset, is what it is. Yeah. So it's a zero sum game. If Tim wants to get, Matt has to lose. And dude, the great thing is, it doesn't work like that at all.
No.
It is a totally abundant system. Like there isn't any scarcity.
Mm-hmm. And that's why when you picture win-win-win situations, the magic works better. It just happens.
I like that a lot, man.
Yeah, that's cool. It is.
Because it also has a Neville Goddard sort of aspect to it as well, where it's like actually like thinking of those effects on other people too is enhancing the context that I'm envisioning. Like it's actually like helping me to envision the experience of having the thing desired because I'm putting it in a wider, like I'm like, again, thinking of someone besides myself. Actually puts me in the context of it's a more fleshed out reality.
Yeah, and that it's not a new concept either. That's the basics of prayer, really. Most of the time when you're praying, I don't know how they teach it in churches these days, but when I was a kid, the focus was always you're praying for other people most of the time. And when I would do my nightly prayers, the focus was always you first are, I'm wishing good things. I'm praying for other people and praying for stuff like that. And then I always tack in a couple things for myself at the end. Also, hey, P.S. God, can you help me out with these stupid school bullies and make me happier? Bye.
Yeah. And I'm a more useful member of the community when I'm, you know, in that place anyway. So it does help. It helps everybody out.
Everybody is. Everybody is. The myth of selfishness is just that. I think it's a myth. And people will scream, oh, there's selfish people everywhere, blah, 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 blah. Yes, yes, there are. But when an actual situation happens, any sort of, and I think we've discussed this before, if something bad actually happens, people don't all whip out a bunch of guns and form walking dead tribes in, a couple of hours, which is what Hollywood will have us believe will happen with any sort of bump in the road that's going to come up at all. You know, an excessive gridlock and that's it. Someone's walking around shooting every. Actually, that was this movie I saw as a kid with like Michael Douglas.
Falling down.
Yeah, that was a great movie. But then thinking back, it's like, that was propaganda, wasn't it? that was just trying to make me afraid of people in road rage. And it was very like, he was a white guy and he was kind of racist and stuff. So there was like layers to it. But, you know, that's what they want you. They want you thinking that if anything ever happens at all, your community is going to become a bunch of wild dogs that are going to tear everyone apart. But that's not, has never been my experience with anything that's ever happened. You know, you're in a mall and the lights go out because the power, and this happened to me, power goes out. People aren't running out with their groceries. People aren't freaking out. They're all sort of looking around and they're looking, are you okay? You know, they're looking at, is that old lady can't see because it's dark? Ma'am, are you okay? You know, the kids are scared. People, they naturally want to look after each other. It's a thing that happens, especially in emergency situations. So I don't know. I think that the that you're spot on there. We are not only interconnected, but we're built to work for each other. And that's very important because we are a vastly interconnected species. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why exile used to be considered a punishment worse than death.
Yeah, now that's what everyone does all the time. Right. I saw one of the saddest memes ever where someone was like, wow, social medias are great. I wish friends were real in real life. I know, it was a meme, but I was like, that's funny, but also incredibly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because I feel that sometimes. I'm like, I don't even understand why I have these social media things on there because no one interacts with me. I don't want to interact with any of the things on there. I mean, there's maybe a couple people who send me messages here and there, but it's not a real friendship. Everything about social media just makes you feel lonelier and more angry and kind of icky.
So it's interesting because I actually have a different experience because I haven't been on it in so long. Oh. And I recently got back on it and I've like reconnected with a bunch of people. So it's actually been nice. But
well, that's awesome. What do you mean by social media there? Are you talking about Discord? Are you talking about Facebook? Are you talking about
all of it? I'm on all
of it. Oh, really? Well, yeah.
I was off all of it for a long time. And I was like, why don't I feel like I exist? And it's kind of an interesting thing because it's part of also like something I've been learning about being around. It's like if it's just a matter of preference, right? If I prefer to be known, I've got to be around. If I don't want to be known, it's okay to not be around. But the problem comes in when there's a misalignment between my desire and my action.
We just circled back around.
Yeah,
definitely. That's exactly right. Yeah.
But I also, the social media thing, I feel like maybe it was fortuitous for me not to be on it for so long because I don't have that point of view on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did. That's why I got off of it originally. I was like, man, fuck this, you know? But yeah.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's kind of just like a wasteland. It is a tool. I keep them around because they're every once in a while, someone contacts me.
Do you know what's a wasteland?
Dating, MySpace.
Dating apps. Well, that is too.
Dating apps. Yeah. I really recommend, I just think you should just try and go out, get a hobby, take a class, meet people in real life. It works. It does. I know people have met people online and they're very happy and that's awesome. But we live in such a lonely, disconnected world. I highly recommend that if anyone's looking for a partner, you just step out of your comfort zone a little, try some new things, and you'll likely meet some more community.
Resonance, man. Resonance.
Resonance. Again. Yeah, again, resonance. So I was supposed to be on the show last week, right? But I built a fence.
I was like, what are you, Robert Frost? That's what I said to Mel.
I built a fence. Well, and the thing was this, our neighbors moved years ago, probably 6 or 7, honestly. And it went sold sight unseen to some guy who wants to just tear them down anyways. And so we kind of contacted, I left a couple notes, you know, the guy never got back to us. And we thought, well, if he's just going to tear it all down, I don't want to build a fence. And then he tears it down. And then now enough time's gone by and I've met him a few times and I mentioned the fence and there was no interest. So this year we were just like, we're just building the fence. And it was actually really great because, I mean, it was exhausting. And my dad came out and helped me. But as we were working, it reminded me of something that I had been wanting to talk to you about on this show before, which is practical magic. So we don't realize that there are so many times on every single day in our day-to-day experience that we are actually doing magical, we are in magical states. We're moving into perfect states for performing magical things. We're just not realizing that that's what we can do that there, because we're just like, I am brushing my teeth now. This is what I do when I brush my teeth. Or, you know, I am putting lotion on my body now because I have showered. That is a physical thing that I do. But all this stuff is habitual things. They're things that we're doing all the time. They're repetitive motions. We're usually in a disassociated state when we're doing them. And so they're actually prime for incorporating small bits of magic into your daily life that are going to keep going all the time. There's one sigil I cast every time I do the lotion, because Edmonton water is so hard. It like peels this layer off you, like this whole layer sheds off you when you're in the shower, that you have to lotion afterwards. And so when I have a sigil that I've been drawing, and it was one I started drawing when I was a kid, long before I ever knew what sigils were. I was in grade 4 and I just started drawing this thing, and I started drawing it in all my books, and I was drawing it all the time. And to this day, so I still have that, and I do, I don't even remember what it's, I cast it for at this point. I can't really remember what I cast it for, but I know it's something good. It seems to be working. So I still do it every time I'm doing my lotion. I have my little things I do, 3 times sigil, and then squirt lotion, 3 times sigil, squirt, squirt, squirt. And it's finding those moments and bringing holiness back into them and incorporating some magic into them. So what made me think about this in particular was when I was building the fence with my dad. And anytime I've been doing renovations and stuff, and we've done a lot in our home, I don't think about it beforehand. We were talking about this a few days ago too, where we're talking about spontaneity. For me, the best magic I've ever done has been spontaneous, and it has to be, there's something physical related to it as well. And that might just be the way that I'm built, because as I did say, I am a Sag. and I am very physical and audio, you know, I'm very AV. I'm a Virgo rising. So repetition and pattern is also very, very key for me as well, especially in magical workings. Now, a lot of stuff that people would do, like grimoire work and a lot of Wicca and like other magical things, I often couldn't get into them, and they don't really work for me. And I'm also really not interested. And I think that has to do with being raised Catholic. And so there was a lot of overlap, and I was really rejecting Catholicism because there was layers of being, you know, a Catholic that I hated. And though there was tons of great info and magical info and basically everything Jesus said, I'm like, yeah, man, that's good stuff. The actual worship practice in the church, I had really bad experience with. And so when I started trying to do lots of other magical things, I just saw those patterns. So it didn't quite work for me. So I ended up, my magical practice is very more like John Constantine, where it's, I just am kind of making it up. It happens spontaneously, and I just know now how to get my energy in the right place and how to put my energy into the thing that I'm doing. So when we're working on this fence, my dad's there helping me. So I have ancestor, like we already have, you know, family energy into it, ancestor energy. We're literally putting up a wall, a protective wall. So we already have that layer going there, and everything we're doing is repetitive and patterns. So as we're doing each layer, I'm kind of like, I just say a couple of little words over a board here. We're drilling some holes, doing the augering, just a little energy work, a little throwing it into there. And then when I'm zapping up the boards and I'm having to do all the screws, because there's 4 in each one, and as you're putting them in, it's boom, 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 zzz, zzz, boom, 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 zzz, zzz, boom, and it's just this repetitive pattern, and you just can you fall into sort of a trance-like state while you're doing it. So you just throw in a little bit more protective spell work. So you can request some ancestors looking over you. You can throw in some just protective magic. When I was building this fence, I was putting in like a peace, prosperity, and protection kind of thing. And I've done this all over my house. So we redid floors one time, and I'm like, and I put a sigil on the subfloor in there and put it in. I built this bay window one time, and I put sigil magic in there. One time they scraped up our street, and they were going to put a new street down. So that night I ran out and I put a whole bunch of crystals that I had said some magical workings on into the grooves, so that the next day when they came, they paved it into the street. And it was, you know what?
Oh, dope.
We redid that street last year, And I felt it disappear. And I didn't get out in time to go stick some new ones in. It's unfortunate. So it's all these little things that we're doing and all these little opportunities. Every single day in your life, you have these opportunities to do magic. And you don't actually have to really, you only have to consciously do it. So if it's something you're doing every day, like brushing your teeth or brushing your hair, you only have to really consciously put in the energy and sigil or the prayer a few times. And then once you've done it enough, it becomes part of your subconscious. Your body runs the program on its own. And there you go. And then now when I brush my hair, I'm already slipping into the state that I have established. And I'm doing some magic while I'm doing my dishes. I'm throwing some cleanly. You're already doing a physical, like a physical representation of a lot of the magical workings most of us will want to do in our homes anyways. So you just throw in a little glitz. You throw in a little bit of the non-physical into it while you're doing it. That's some of the best magic I've done.
It's good stuff.
And it stays, and it really helps with your relationship with your house spirits as well. Especially when your house is like getting older and like, okay, like you need to tell me if you need things done so that I know that they're going to happen. And so if you can have that relationship with your house as well, that it helps out a lot. Sometimes it's a little expensive, but you know, it's worth it in the long run. There's so many different examples of places that you can throw those little magical things in, but literally
there's an interesting thing too, that I was just thinking about when you were talking is, doing that, but also coming at it from the other angle too, and making like these very magical activities to be just as normal of a part of your daily life as brushing your teeth.
Oh, I can see it going conversely. Yeah.
Same thing, but just at a different angle. So like cleansing, like that's something that's been big for me lately, man, is,
Well, you went all over the country this year,
yes,
didn't you?
Dude. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah.
The energy.
Did you just have a 3-day bath when you got home?
Dude, I've just been cleansing like a motherfucker, dude. I've been just like, you know, smoke, singing some PGM vowels, singing some PGM power words and stuff. But also that's become just a daily hygienic practice, right? And if I'm doing magic, it really helps because those limiting beliefs and those like, this isn't going to fucking work or this is bullshit or like, oh, I'm just having a shitty day. Those are spirits, man. Those are spirits, and like I can banish them, and guess what, when I do that they go away. It gets the other day I banished a rabbit hole. I was sucked into a rabbit hole. I'm just, and it doesn't matter what the rabbit hole is, it was just information that I couldn't leave alone. And I was just kind of becoming a little bit obsessive about it because I have an obsessive mind, and that's okay. But like sometimes I got shit to do. And so I did a headless rite and a cleansing, and it wasn't pulling me the same way. It's like I can engage with the information, but it doesn't have to suck me into the hole, you know?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. Yeah, that's a really awesome point, because one thing that we're always talking about, any sort of guru or any sort of magical person you're out there listening, one of the main things they're always saying is developing a daily practice, developing a regular spiritual practice, whether it's meditation in the morning or, you know, like you said, cleansing back. You say prayers over your food, saying a thanks for your food. It's a really easy one to do.
Yeah.
And so I can 100% agree with you. Whereas we should be all incorporating and building a regular spiritual practice. But conversely, we can also at the same time start applying spiritual practice into the things that are already built. That's amazing. I'm actually excited now that you just said that.
Yeah, do both. Bring it, come out.
No one can see our fingers coming together, but everyone, we're putting our fingers together.
No, I meant like a
puzzle,
video.
Like a puzzle piece. Oh, okay, perfect.
I'm trying to figure out video. I'm not quite there yet, but we'll see.
Well, it'll be entertaining because you're in your old van.
Yeah.
Anytime you get excited, the whole Zoom thing, it just bounces.
It's like shakes, a
bouncy
dude.
Castle. Yeah.
And I was at first, you know, it's nice because the way you describe it makes it sound like a feature and not a bug. Like where I'm like watching the footage and I'm like, damn it, this is all unusable. Really, it's just, it's kind of an immersive experience, right?
Yeah. Oh, Tim has something to say. He's not talking, but the whole Dodge is bouncing.
Dude, and I've got my altars are right over there off camera, you know? So mm-hmm. I'm also in the spirit room.
That's rad.
Yeah, yeah. Good times.
Ooh. So that was built. So I built that fence and it's great. And I'm very, very happy with it. And I had a wonderful time with my dad and it was hilarious. It was his birthday, like the day before. He just turned 69 and he comes out to help me build a fence. And I didn't really need his help. I was going to just take me a few days longer, you know, doing it by myself. But man, what a good time. And it feels amazing. And the energy flow, that's where my brain was going. I finally caught up with myself. So once we put that fence up, the change in our yard was so significant that both of us were just like, why didn't we do this forever ago? We were just getting so much energy flow off the street, not only just sound, but just vibes. And our street's not been great lately. It's kind of getting there's a little bit more like homeless stuff going on, a little more thefty things going on, because a lot of the homeless people have been sort of pushed out of downtown into our area so that the city can be like, hey, look, our homeless problem is kind of solved. But they really just pushed it out of the inner ring.
Right.
A little bit. Yeah, they just moved it out.
That's an interesting point about like a strong, like, okay, a strong container actually, and this may be counterintuitive at first, it was to me, but a strong container actually helps energy flow. And this is true about myself and drawing boundaries that are healthy and like making choices that, keep my energy from flowing in a place that it doesn't need to go or that I'm not interested in it going. Like, you know, at first I was like, well, isn't that going to, I thought it would block me off or something, you know, but really just like the fence in your yard, it actually like creating a strong container actually really helps the energy flow almost like a closed pipe system or something.
You pretty much just described, like the Reiki and biofield work that I do. So most the biofield work, a lot of it is about, we talk about blockages and stuff, but when you energetically look at the field and what's going on, most of the time what's happening is energy is being siphoned off. So it's just like an electrical connection where even the electrical connection can still work and the light can come on, even if there are places where the cord's a little frayed and some of the power is, you know, being lost a little bit in different places. It's just coming a bit off, but it can still go and kind of turns the light on. But if you can find those areas where that electrical signal is being lost a little and fix it and, you know, bring it back in together, then the flow goes right through and the light lights up fully like it's supposed to. And that is a large part of the biofield work that I do, is closing off these areas where where the energy is being siphoned. So sometimes it's kind of like a hole in the field where it's like the energy is just being lost out into the world, into nothing. And it's just being drained out slowly from like a leak, you know, a little leak in an inflatable thing or something. And in other times it's a blockage there and the energy is going into the blockage. So it's like it's being grounded into this thing that is, you know, just collecting it and is building it up. And so I like we do the Reiki first, because that helps me out with a lot of the blockages. And then when I go around and do all the stuff with the forks for the biofield tuning, a lot of that is about closing up. Some of it's about releasing some of the blockages, but I find a lot of the biofield work is more about closing up the holes. So it's kind of like releasing blockages in the Reiki work, and then the biofield focuses a lot more on like patching.
Yeah, I like things. That image.
So it gets all the energy. Yeah, the energy flow is going right the way that it needs to. And energy cycles back into itself too, right? So there's a combination of things coming from source and things being grounded out through your palms and your feet. But then you're also cycling it back up and it's coming back in again. And it's following your electromagnetic field.
Like a toroid kind of shape.
Yeah, that is exactly the shape. Yeah. Yeah, rad.
Hell yeah.
I love these conversations with you. I have a few friends like this because things that we mentioned earlier on suddenly just cycle, they come back up later and in the perfect way. And often you'll say something that is just like, I didn't think of that at all. And it complements exactly what I was thinking earlier. I was trying to think about the other things we were talking about that made us want to get together and do a show again. Oh, we were talking about the physical magic stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I'm very visual, and I talked about this earlier. So a lot of the work that I do, and that's why most of the practices that I work with were less classic magic and a little bit more new age stuff combined with old forms of prayer and things like that. Because a lot of the new age kind of things were very much about visualization, and that works super, super well for me. So one thing when I was a kid, I saw, do you remember Unsolved Mysteries?
Yeah, totally.
I got goosebumps. The theme song still gives me goosebumps. It's great. But there was one Unsolved Mysteries I saw. My dad and I would watch it all the time because we were the weirdos of the family. We'd always watch the weird shows together. And there was one about this guy who had a brain tumor. They told him he was going to die in like 6 months or something. And pardon me. So he started a regimen of meditation where he was visualizing the tumor being like broken down and destroyed. Now, I didn't realize at the time, because I didn't know much about chaos magic and the theories behind Gnosticism and stuff, but the guy he nailed it. What he visualized, he didn't visualize, you know, a saint coming to help him out. He didn't visualize, you know, what would be another good example? Like, you know, raven spirit or any of the traditional stuff. He literally pictured multiple times a day, he pictured the Ghostbusters from the final scene of the first Ghostbusters crossing the streams.
Nice.
And shooting his tumor. And then every day he watched them. We got to cross the streams, boys. They cross the streams because he loved the movie. Cross the streams, shoot his tumor, and he'd watch it get smaller. And he fucking healed his tumor. The tumor disappeared. And it was only much, 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 much later. And actually kind of recently that it popped into my head again that I realized that's totally like, one of the main lectures I saw years ago, I saw this dude lecture on chaos magic. And that was one of the most important things he was talking about was, how does it connect you? How are you connecting to the magic, and how are you connecting to the reality? And that's what makes it work. And that's what's so important. So a lot of people who want to get into a lot of the old magic-y stuff, some people have a really hard time with it because they don't have a connection with it. And you have to kind of build one. If you don't really have a connection to the material, you either have to start building a connection with it to try and get that belief up and to get that energy up, or you have to kind of find a different system that you naturally are already predisposed to believing a little bit more in. So I love this guy gave the example of, you know, instead of summoning Hermes, you know, I would maybe summon Spock, right? Because in his mind, that is important to him. That means something to him on many layers. And Hermes doesn't really mean much to most of the modern people, unless you live in Winnipeg, because the golden boy is Hermes on the top of the ledge. Which, I got that book. I mentioned that in another podcast. There was a long time ago. I woke up one morning and CBC Radio, this guy was talking about how the Winnipeg Ledge is essentially the Ghostbusters building because it's built weird. They use weird materials. There's like 13 steps, 13 lights. There's all sorts of hermetic symbols. He's Hermes. He wrote a book. I didn't know. And I just thought of it the other day and I got his book. And it was from a couple years after I heard him talk on that. I'm so excited to dig right into it. I kind of want to come back on the show after I've read the whole thing and we can talk a little bit more about it.
Book club.
But yeah, it's amazing. And it's really neat and it's full of pictures too, which is awesome. And he's just a historian and hoo-ha buff. So yeah. But anyways, so we're talking about your relationship with things being very, very important to how you connect to the magic. And that actually will change your success rate. A lot. And so we were talking about this technique that I have developed that I hate, but also I have to love it kind of too, because
it works.
Because it works. It works really, really well. And it's frustrating because it works so well. And it's only frustrating purely because of what the method is. And so for the listeners, what kind of happened was I was definitely thinking about this Ghostbusters guy. You know, that was all in my head. And, you know, how we interconnect with things and how magic works. And one time I was heading to work in my car, and I already was establishing, we were talking about practical magic here. In my car, I had to drive 2 freeways every day, and I had already established a meditative sort of practice in the car, to the point where now I don't even need to have the music on anymore. If I'm in the car and I'm on the freeway, I move right into my heart center. Like, the breathing just happens. It's quite awesome. I still kind of yell at dumb drivers sometimes, but it's not as bad as it once was. But I'm driving to work, and I think I was getting a cold, was what it was. I'm almost certain that it was because I work with kids, so that happens a lot. And I was just like, man, I need to go into my settings. Like, I need to go into my body, and I need to just, you know, tweak things. And so I'm driving down the freeway, and I just suddenly kind of instinctively sort of see a settings gear, like from your phone, on my wrist. So I thought, oh, you know, I tapped it and opened it up, like, you know, one of the holographic computers they have in the sci-fi movies, which that's the quantum computers, I think, is what they call them often. But so I open up the settings, and then I can visualize, even though I'm driving, I can still visualize quite well because we're so addicted to our cell phones. And I have a pretty good understanding of basic anatomy and things like that as well, because, you know, I have my diagrams for acupressure and stuff around all the time. So I open up the settings, and then I just start going into different areas of my body. And, you know, I'm going into, like, first I went into, like, immunity things, and, like, cranked up, like, white blood cells, crank up my immune system, and, like, designate sending them to an area of my body. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I go into, like, my emotional state, and I, like, crank up, like, contentedness, like, bring up happiness all the way up, and, like, bring, you know, loneliness, and oh, let's bring that down to zero and stuff like that, and go in, like, I'm like, oh, let's, like, my eyes are pretty good, but let's just, like, let's make my teeth a little whiter, and we're gonna, you know, make my eyesight a little better. And I just go and adjust all these settings, and then at the end, just before I exit out, I picture the "Would you like to save your changes?" And I feel like this is the most important part of this method. Is because we can all visualize this. Everyone is so into computers now and so into phones. This is a very, very easy visual technique to do. And if you know yourself well, and if you know bodies well, you can go into all sorts of different areas, and you just, you know, you're flicking through to find the sub, you know, panel that you want to go into. And then you enter that, and you're like, I want to go into my feet, and go into the feet. And you're like, okay, I'm going to, you work on the ball of the foot and my, you know, my fascia. Yeah. Okay. There we go. And tweak things. And then as you're leaving, you want to save the changes, and you could just picture that little now saving thing. And once it's saved, you put it back into your wrist. Now you need to be in a meditative state when you do this, but man, it works. It's annoying that it works, because I'm basically treating myself like a cell phone or a robot or some kind of AI device. But I have always been of the belief that all of this technology is us just trying to physically express what we already can energetically, naturally do as human beings.
I like
and
that.
Everything we do with technology is just trying to make a physical expression of what already happens. And that has a lot to do with the moving from the feminine energy into masculine energy. And when everyone's blocked in their hearts, they spend most of their time just in the lower, we say lower, but they're not really lower chakras. It's just the male, and they just happen to be, you know, lower. But everything moves through the heart. It's like the event horizon. So we just get stuck in the materialist part. And so I just feel like we have so forgotten what we can do as human beings that we are constantly trying to remind ourselves by creating these things all the time. The internet is just a version of collective, you know, unconsciousness. A lot of these things, like social networks and stuff, are even just, you know, a manifestation of, like, the friend groups and things.
I think it's also a kind of an expression of what happens when you, so if I no longer believe in those things,
mm-hmm.
if I no longer accept those parts of me as reality, if I'm just like a fucking meat machine, guess what happens? Those things become projected into the physical realm mm-hmm. as just a function of projection, because they've become, I'm no longer conscious of them. I haven't integrated them. So if they're not integrated, they're going to spring up in the outside external realm until I can reintegrate them. So that's an interesting, I've never thought about it that way, actually. Huh. I have to think.
Yeah, right. Should we just pause here and just have a long, we're going to have 1 minute of silence. Well, Tim thinks, and I can tell you, the van is shaking.
A minute of silence for our machine overlords.
So I highly recommend you try that technique out. You may be resistant. Anyone who is kind of like not digging the culture that exists around phones and computers, I don't blame you. That's why I also was even after I made it and it worked and I used it again and it worked, it still kind of felt like adultery almost, like cheating on my own beliefs, like if that makes sense.
Yeah,
because
the thing is, it's like, if this is already, and this is kind of what I first thought of when you were talking to me about this, is you know, when we were chatting about it before, if it's already part of my programming, I can't deny the fact that I've been programmed
mm-hmm.
this way, for the better or for worse, it's there, and so I might as well hijack it.
Yes, that, you, 100%. No, that's spot on, Tim. Yeah, that's 100%. I did it again.
I love it. I say it so much, I can't even.
100%. It's true. What you say is true. I'm going to say 100% again.
It comes back to the, this Lord of the Rings idea of like all the dissonance of Melkor ends up being woven beautifully into the music of Iluvatar, you know? And so like, it's part of the story now. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to engage with it? Like, am I going to stay in a negative, not even negative isn't even necessarily the best way to put it, but like, am I gonna stay angry? Am I gonna stay in resentment of this thing that's entered into my life and is now such a big part of all of our lives? Because I can stay there and I can fucking get cancer from that shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, just the same I would get it from whatever else, you know?
Yeah.
And or I can dance with the one that brought me, dude. Like,
mm-hmm.
the dance is the dance. Am I going to fucking sit there on the sidelines or am I going to dance? And just because I don't like some of the themes in the song, is no reason to just plant my feet, you know?
That's fair. It's funny that you say Lord of the Rings, though, because where I went right away, because we're talking about using the tool against, you know, the corrupter, I just thought of the ring. And all the people were like, we should use the ring. Let's use the ring. But then they just throw it in the volcano. And I was like, so is Tim saying I should throw my phone in the volcano or I should put the ring on?
So that's interesting, right? Yeah.
The tool of the enemy.
Yeah.
But is it really a tool of the enemy? Or is it just, like we discussed earlier, us just trying to remind ourselves we can do these things?
We're going to nerd out even deeper, because what the elf lords did was, so they had rings that were like definitely like the technology was inspired by Sauron and like he mm-hmm. taught them how to do it. But the elven rings were independent to a larger extent than the rings of the dwarves, the rings of men, who I believe were just like straight up built by Sauron. And so they were able to hold out for longer. And those actually, like, it was inevitable that their power would fade when the ring was destroyed. But for the time that the one ring was around, those mm-hmm. rings actually, like, Gandalf had the Kindler, the Ring of Fire, and he used it to kindle the hearts of those who would fight, you know, for the light. And then the rest of the rings, the elven rings, were used to preserve the elven realms.
Mm-hmm.
To keep those shards of elfiness, like, kind of flourishing while the power of Sauron was around. So that's a good example there, right? Like,
yeah, there we go. And so we
don't use the one ring, but like, if you got an elven ring, shit.
Use it.
So like, you can have an iPhone. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but you know, that's a wonderful point. And yet again, we discover that everything is just Lord of the Rings. So everyone just go read Lord of the Rings.
It really is, though.
It is. You know, and when you get into the stories of him writing it and how things came to him and the things that he was doing as he was working on it, I don't know. It's pretty incredible. All the people who just say, he's writing about World War II. Oh, man. There's so many layers to it. I remember at one point when I was listening to, was it Greg Braden, Bruce Lipton? It's that oof. Yeah, right. That sort of group of people. And they were talking about this being the fifth epoch of man, essentially. So that, like, or we're moving into the fifth age is what they're saying, moving into the fifth epoch. And suddenly all I could think of, I was like, well, hang on a second. In Middle Earth, that was the third age, and they were moving into the age of man, which was the fourth age. And then there's, I'm like, so I was just like, is this a reference to Lord of the Rings?
Dude, it totally is just, Lord of the Rings, though.
Because it is like, it's Lord of the Rings. So it's, they were basically saying that, like, and you know, we look at these, and I've come across this lots where they talk about there's been all these epochs of advanced cultures. We've been advanced multiple times. There's actually a convention happening in August where there's like 11 writers and historians and stuff all coming to Colorado to talk about how there is at least one pre-diluvian civilization that was just as advanced, if not more, than we are right now. And there's a plethora of evidence about it, but it's just because we have such an accepted version of history, it's really difficult to get anything new in there, especially when it contradicts or rubs certain agendas or certain beliefs the wrong way.
Yeah, there's I just talked about this on a episode I recorded with Kurt Huggins and Reverend Janglebones. There's not only do people's careers kind of like revolve around their research and upholding the status quo, but then you also have like the Smithsonian, who is like,
oh yes,
you know, that's like they're, they just seem to be around so that you won't believe in giants, you know? Like,
I was just going to say, yeah, they're kind of just, they're like the trash disposal. Isn't that what it is? Like the trash compactor?
They're the room at the end of Indiana Jones.
Oh yeah. Actually, that's the analogy.
It is.
Yeah, it's the totally room at the end of Indiana Jones.
And then they display the artifacts that uphold the official narrative,
mm-hmm,
while hiding and possibly exploiting the ones that don't. And to me, this fits into my model of the ziggurat, but we don't have to go into that.
I was going to say, they could easily use that information to get people to buy in climate change. If you really want people to buy into climate change, why don't you just show them evidence that, like, hey, there was a whole big civilization of giants, but they killed themselves because of climate change, guys. And then people be like, oh, fuck, what? We better pull our shit together.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of thought that goes into, mm-hmm, like this. And we're just like, I don't know. That's another reason why I'm like, I've scaled back my Archon thinking a lot. Because I do think I'm giving them way too much power and credit.
Yeah, I had a
thing. They are responsible for fucking everything. You know what I mean?
I had that realization years ago, and it was when George W. Bush came to protest came to speak in Edmonton, and then everyone was protesting. And we went to film it because we were doing like this. We were like part of the Zeitgeist movement, which totally was just another, you know, propaganda. Anyways. And so we were doing like Evolution Solution. We were making these videos and we're talking about the, oh, George W. Bush. Yeah. And And then I realized I had this little kind of editorial that I gave after, because just watching it, I realized this is why he sold out. You know, like I started thinking about activism completely differently, because I realized that activism is literally, you are feeding, you are putting energy into the thing that you hate. You're giving it more power, okay, and you're making it stronger.
So we are going to talk about the ziggurat, because this okay. is my idea of the ziggurat is.
And so I thought the best thing you could do is literally ignore it and turn away from
it.
And
then
you have to starve it. It's the only way.
Starve the ziggurat. So here's my idea of the ziggurat. I'm just going to go into it, right?
Do it now. So, oh, now the vans are shaking.
Yeah, the vans are shaking.
The vans are shaking. Oh, it's going to be a good one.
We're cooking with gas, baby. So the ziggurat is, it's a simple idea, because it's one point that everyone can look at. If I can get everyone to look at one point, it doesn't matter what their opinion on it is, as long as they are feeding me energy. So I have like, so whatever's on top of the ziggurat, maybe half of the people fucking hate it and half of the people love it. And the people that hate it love to hate it. And the people mm-hmm. that love it, love to love it. And they have, there's a whole bunch of energy built up into this system of whatever's on top of this thing. And like mm-hmm. I said, I'm being vague because it doesn't matter what it is.
As it's just a focal point.
It's the focal point. And it can be something like, it works for both sides. So if one side hates it and one side loves it, that's great. But if you switch it, it works the same way. That's why mm-hmm. it seems like it's like, okay, why is this information coming out now? Because it's all just, it's energy. And this isn't a new concept, right? Like, but where it comes to what's helpful for me to look at it this way is that it is a magic system, right? So, mm-hmm. so that energy that's being pulled into the ziggurat is then used for further narrative control. So it's mm-hmm. actually, it's being used for to concretize the imperial narrative of like, and this feeds into the Smithsonian conversation, because they use the artifacts that support the official narrative, and there's something going on there magically where you display that in a museum and say, this is officially what happened. And that energy is cycling back. So it gets fed from all sides by anger, love, disgust, hate, whatever.
Well, all those things you're talking about are essentially forms of mass meditation.
Yeah.
It's a group emoting. Yeah. And that just, and it feeds it.
Yeah. And it feeds it. And so you're siphoning the energy from the masses and then using it to, it then goes top down, right? So it goes mm-hmm. up to the top of the ziggurat. It basically hijacks the power of heaven and then distributes that energy back to the masses in a managed, cohesive, it's not always cohesive, right? But it's like, it's a concretized narrative. Because really the truth is that it's all like, it's all stories, and all the stories are different, and everyone has their different experience. And it's like very gray area where there's a lot of nuance and fluidity, but the empire doesn't need that to happen for them to continue to be an empire. They mm-hmm. need their version of the story to be 100% the only one. And this, of course, eventually breaks reality, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's what I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. It works on so many levels too, what you're saying, because if you can even just think about it in terms of money.
Yeah.
So hating money and loving money gives money only has power. It only exists because we collectively as a species have agreed that it's worth something. That's the whole thing about the fiat currency, right? Is it, this means money, and we have to agree on that. And so we have to put energy in it to make it something, because if all of us just stop putting energy into money completely, it only has value because we're putting energy into it. Now, on a personal level, hating money gave it power over me.
Yeah.
Loving money, obsessing with money, needing money, gave it power over me. And I was only ever really able to get over my money issues because it just seemed like I was eternally stuck in debt, making bad money choices and being getting screwed. Like I just always felt like every time I made a choice towards my art or anything and I wanted to invest in something, it was always a bad choice and you know, blah, blah, blah. And those are all in my head and that's just giving it more and more power. So the thing I ended up having to do was I had to never think, can we afford this anymore? And it sounds like that makes it sound like I just started spending money everywhere, but I just stopped having that conversation in my head. It was like, if this is something that I'm going to get right now, okay, I'm just going to get it. I'm never going to think, can we afford this? I'm never going to think anything about that anymore. Groceries, I stopped looking at the price of groceries. I bought what I felt was healthy and I just bought it and then I paid for it. And I honestly don't look at the price a lot of time when I go. Yeah. And now it's been years now and I'm so free from all that stupid money stuff. And the only way I could ever get over it was I had to ignore it. I had to shut it all off and stop worrying about it, stop obsessing about it in both ways and just forget it and allow it to just be a thing. So
yeah, dude, that was life-changing for me. And it was really only for me was it had to come with having more access to money. Cause like, I just, I didn't understand. Like I didn't get it. But then once I had the experience of having money and just being able to buy what I needed without like, I needed to buy a jacket when I was on the road. And I was like, I'm just going to buy the jacket I want. And it doesn't fucking matter what it costs.
Yeah.
And that unlocked it for me. And now it's like, I'm not even necessarily still there in terms of the physical amount of money in my bank account, but the attitude is still able to be there. And therefore I'm bringing that energy to it.
Yeah. And we've come back to resonance again.
Yes.
Because it's the same thing, right? So I was always resonating money issues, money issues, money issues, good, bad money issues, problems with money, things with money. We need money, money. And then when I was finally just like, it doesn't matter, it stopped mattering to the point where I just don't have money problems at all anymore.
So this is interesting because this is why this feeds into the Ziggurat conversation. And this is kind of what I want to get across with that is that it. So if I'm giving energy to it, even if I'm like, we got to fight the system, that is giving energy to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're talking about like hating money did the same thing. Well, like if like hating Trump or hating Biden, dude, it doesn't matter because you're giving the same energy to the Ziggurat. Like they're taking it and they're going to use it. They don't.
When you were describing the Ziggurat, that was money and that's it, and our political systems were the two things that popped into my mind right away. Because when you were describing that, it sounded like you were describing the American political system.
It is the American political system.
Canada's not much better. We throw in a couple like generic choices, like Le Politician and Politician Green, and then but you're still basically voting between two.
So the interesting
I was just going to say one thing I realized the other day is: did you know Canada's the opposite is from the States? So here, red means liberal. That's true. We also have very strange chips. But I just meant like red here means left, and blue means right.
Yeah, that's an interesting important. I think that's kind of important, right? Because it shows
weird
the perspective thing. So like the what I was going to say is the interesting idea about one focal point is that it doesn't matter what point of view you look at it from. If you're looking at that focal point, you're all looking at the same spot.
Ah.
So there's 360
You're staring
degrees.
Into the sun.
Yeah, there's 360 degrees on that political graph, you know, where it's like the political axis or whatever. And it doesn't matter. As long as if you're staring at the same point,
yeah,
I'm feeding it energy.
That's sleight of hand. You just described illusion, which but yesterday one of my former coworkers sent me a Snapchat of one of those magic kits, and she's bringing it to her after schoolers to, you know, play because the kids are into magic right now. And she's like, tell me I'm not going to have the best day of my life. And I was like, yeah, it's just going to be followed by disappointment when you realize it's all just illusion, because my big thing and that I hate is I hate the term magician. I hate, as it's commonly used anyway, I don't trust people who do magic. So people who do street magic stuff, and I've known lots because I've been in the arts my whole life. I've known lots of them. and it, nice enough dudes, but there's, you can tell, you always, there's this vibe, you know, you can't trust that person. And when you think about it logistically, it's because they're lying to you all the time. Everything they do, even what they are, is a lie. They're telling you, I'm a magician, I do magic. Bullshit. You do fucking sleight of hand. You take one coin while you wiggle your fingers over on the left and you put it in your fucking pocket. That's not magic. That is literally just like, it's illusion. You want to call it illusion is what it should be called. They are illusionists. They are not magicians. And I think a lot of them get to a point where they start experimenting with real magic, and I think it doesn't go very well for them. But I always make the joke, it's like, you know, I don't trust magicians and teachers. Like, it's just the two. I have a natural distrust for both industries. But yeah, the main one with magic, and it bugs me because it is not magic. And then that lie is perpetuated, and then they focus on children specifically. You know, they don't go, hey, let's go do magic for the seniors, and let's go do magic for, you know, it's always a children's thing, because the point of magicians is to kill magic in kids. It's kind of the same as like Disney and a lot of these other things where it's like, look at Harry Potter, and magic happens instantly. Oh, but that's not real. So.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. That is kind of, it's misdirection. Exactly.
Does a lot with kids, like because I work with kids, so I'm hyper aware of all of this stuff. And I think we talked about this before with like Santa and all these little lies that we have collectively agreed it's okay to do, but no one ever thinks about what we're psychologically teaching kids, you know, which is number one, that conspiracies are real. And that's okay. Some conspiracies are okay because it's for your own good. So literally Santa, Tooth Fairy, all the kid ones, they're all about that. It's all, a conspiracy can be a good thing if it is for the greater good, for your benefit. And that's what subconsciously being taught on one level. Another level is magic isn't real. Because when kids, they put everything into these things, man. They put everything into the Tooth Fairy. They put everything into Santa, into the Easter Bunny and stuff. And then one day someone comes along, whether it's another kid or it's an adult, and says, well, that's not real. And inside what happens is the seed of magic inside the child withers. This thing that, because they feed it. And when children are powerful, you just had a bug or something fly through there. That's amazing.
Yeah, I got bugs here.
I got ants. So anyways, so kids, they feed it, and it's like they wait for this perfect point to kill it. Because when they're young, we feed them all this stuff about magic.
Are you saying that Santa is MK Ultra?
I'm saying Santa is a ritual. A cultural ritual that has been co-opted now to kill magic.
So it is because MKUltra. It's exactly it's what it is.
Kind of, yeah. Because Santa really, this is how we explained it to our kid. And we're just like, Santa there's many stories of it being sort of a real person, you know, at some point. But what it is it's kind of like, not a psychopomp, but like when a person becomes the embodiment of a god. You know, or the embodiment of when you're doing a ritual and someone represents a physical version of the spiritual thing that you are doing. And that's what it is. Santa, someone dresses up as Santa because we are doing a ritual together to bring each other joy and prosperity, literally because we want to all survive the dark time of the year. And that's it. We're trying to bring each other as much merriment and joy and goodwill to each other, so that we can live through the dark time and make it around one more time. And the visualization, the person who embodies Santa, they're the person who embodies Santa for the ritual that year. It's not a real person. But when the person has a suit on,
they are Santa.
They kind of are Santa, because that's how it works.
Yeah.
Right. So we've been very upfront with our kid about it. And she's been great. And she and she's awesome. She doesn't go blab it to other kids or anything. She just has a very different understanding of what's going on. And she just accepts it. You know, it was hard because I wasn't quite sure I was going to deal with it, because I've always had this opinion. from working with kids for so long about these things, because I've seen it happen. I've seen the magic in a child wither away and go from a sapling to basically back down to a seed again. Because unlike actual plants, the seed doesn't die, but it can wither and bloom.
What's cool is that what you're doing now is, like, the way you described it is you're watching that fire come alive.
I'm purposefully going around to do it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do it. There's no agenda. I'm not singing songs about magic and hating the politicians or anything like that. You know? Yeah. We're doing classic songs. And right. I should be. You know, if I was, I might be like on Spotify or have my own Disney show by now. But we just sing lots of traditional songs and then some songs that are right. And it's just about having fun and being goofy. And it's about being in a place together and sharing that space. Now, the way that I do Mr. Matt, it is formulaic, because I've discussed this before. I'm like Virgo rising. So I do need some sort of regularity because of my Sag aspect, I need things to be different. Right. So it was very hard to find a good job that was actually going to fit for me for a long period of time, because I need variety. But as a Virgo, I also need things to be the same. Contradictory? Fuck you. So kids always worked really well. And now it's especially better because I am doing a similar sort of thing, but I'll change songs up. But it has we start the same way, and the kids love it because kids like repetition. They like knowing what's coming, but also knowing there's going to be a surprise. And that's always been the key to working with kids, is you can't just give them one thing. One thing doesn't work. What you want to try and do is you want to try and give them something that makes them feel as part of a community, but at the same time makes them stand out a bit. So they want to have things that their friends also have, and that's the same as, you know, they're the same and they belong with their friends, but also they need to stand apart a little too. So they want to know what's coming, because that's safety and familiarity, and also helps them feel smarter and everything. But they want a little surprise. There has to be something. So, you know, when I do Mr. Matt, I usually come in and we do our warm-ups, and we warm up our bodies, and then we warm up our voices. You know, we do a little warm-ups, and then we sing a hello song. It's always the same song, but I always change it up a little bit, you know. So it's like hello, hello, and normally it's like, can you clap your hands? But I'll say, can your lips do this? And they'll just make up stupid things, and the kids are all like, ah, it's something weird today. And then we always end on like a similar sort of note, so the whole performance does kind of have sort of a ritualistic aspect. But I mean, I also just described a TV show. Or you know, any sort of regular occurring thing that someone would go and watch. Church is the same way. You know, there's like, there's the things that happen in the beginning, the opening ceremony. Then we do these things. Then there's some stuff that'll be surprising and we might not know what's quite going to happen. And then we all end it the same way. And all rituals kind of go like that, where it's like you have your established, you know, we form this circle together. We open everything up. Then we do our thing, and there's things we know are going to happen, things that are surprising, and then we close it all off, and then we can all grow and you know, from what we've learned from that ritual or session or whatever it is. It's interesting to actually think about that formula and how much that applies to everything out there. Now I've always known that media was propaganda, always on some level, TV shows and stuff especially, because that's native ads and propaganda that you don't realize is, because you think, oh, it's just someone expressing their artistic, you know, their artistic whims, but there's usually something underneath it. And to think about TV shows essentially being rituals is very, very interesting, because they do always,
the fact that there's commercials in them, it's like,
you just blew my mind a little bit more.
Yeah, man, you're inserting it. You're putting someone into a ritual place, and then you're inserting, and this is a repeat of something I talked about on one we just recorded, and so the listeners will hear it. But, dude, I'm inserting into the ritual space, like, that you need to buy my chicken nuggets.
Yeah, because so you'll be hot and have a girlfriend.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and then whatever else is in the TV show.
And I think that actually, I think that breaks reality too. I think that's the reason for like Mandela effect and stuff. And I also think
I agree.
It's going to contribute to the downfall of it all, obviously, like eventually.
Well, that's a problem. That's why there's this loss of control in the season of reveal going on right now, is because they don't have people mass meditating, essentially, and participating in mass rituals at the same time. So even though we've discussed this before, where time doesn't really matter.
We're starving the ziggurat, baby.
We are starving. That's exactly what's going on. And that's why they're trying to get people to all go to the same streaming site. And they're trying to, oh, we're only going to release this on the same. We want everyone to watch all 10 episodes of this show on the same day. They do it in my kid's classroom. So my kid just went through kindergarten. And I'm going to get to say this here, thankfully, because the feedback form wasn't private. So they would know who said it and whose kid belongs to the person who said it. So we didn't really say this to them. But when she started, so in September, in the first month, like second week, they just did a whole week of Terry Fox. Okay, whatever, right? But my kid comes home and the first thing she comes home is her like this booklet. And the first thing she's traced is the word cancer. So her and her kindergarten class spend a whole week on cancer in September. And then the next week, well, because now we have this new holiday, even though the reasons behind the holiday actually turn out to not be legitimate, but we're still rolling with it anyway here in Canada, we talk about reconciliation and residential schools. So in my daughter's first month of kindergarten, they spent a week on cancer and a week on how the church, because they never teach them that the church was under the guidance and following the orders of the government, they just blame it all on the church. And the government's cool with that. They keep pointing the finger at the church because they don't want people to realize, hey, wait a second, their church was actually taking orders from you guys.
It's a two-man grift. It's a shell game.
So in her first month of school, she learns, can't you die from cancer? And some Indigenous kids were totally killed and experimented on and taken from their families. You know, and then, okay, October, she gets Halloween, so that's cool. And then November, fucking war. Then they're just focusing on world war and everything. And they get the kids to sit there for a minute and group think about how bad war is. Well, that sounds like a giant ritual.
And from what we know about, and dude, that's the daily hate.
Mm-hmm. It is. And so we get to November, and she started writing her letters backwards. Because we didn't realize what was going on. Like we had eased off teaching her at home because we thought, oh yeah, they're doing it. And then we get a thing. Oh, we're going to start letters in January. Well, what the fuck have you been doing for these last like 5 months? Turns out it's just teaching them about this other crap. And then they did every religious holiday. And like I said, like I'm not Catholic anymore. I like Christian vibes, you know, generally like the words and stuff, but I'm not like a practicing Christian or anything. But they did every holiday. So they made menorahs, the color menorahs. They made dreidels. They did stuff for Ramadan. They're coloring, you know, like Islamic symbols and stuff. But they never had any coloring pages for Christmas or for Easter. And I'm all for like, hey, teach them about these cultures. Teach them about Indigenous culture. Teach them about all these different holidays. But I don't think you should just leave this fun to this really, really big one out. Simply because their argument will be, well, that's the Catholic school board's job. But that's like saying, oh, well, the Hasidic Jews can teach everyone about Jewish stuff. But that's not the same. Like Hasidic, that's a very specific form of Judaism. That's not all Judaism. And so having only Christian stuff's only in Catholic school is kind of nonsense. And I wouldn't mind it if they weren't doing every other holiday of every other culture. You know, Diwali and Ramadan and you know, all these other holidays. And that's cool. But it bugs me that they won't do this one. You know, so the only thing she learned about Christianity in the year of school was that they murdered a bunch of Indigenous kids. And that's it. So that's weird. Also, I don't know if you've seen this, and I'll send you a link after. They redid the poppy in Canada. They made a poppy sticker several years ago, and it's a swastika now. So wow. Poppies, the old poppy sticker used to, the petals had straight angles, right? Right, just right angles between the poppies. They tilted them all. So now the petals all the petals curve a little to the right, and there's four petals and the black lines. It's literally just a swastika sticker, big fat swastika sticker.
That's
Canada's
crazy, man.
Canada's fucked, man. So weird.
Dude, I hate to do it, but I think we're going to have to end on that note.
Canada's fucked, man.
Canada's fucked, man.
Cue the outro.
Anything else that you want to talk about real quick?
Oh, man. I mean, I could go off.
Things that you are...
You know, I think I
got going on.
I hit most of the things that I wanted to talk about. The one main thing, and we kept sort of dancing around it, is just that, like, we are all inherently psychic, all of us. And we're dancing around it all the time, because what we're trying to do is we need to create a physical or a ritualistic middleman, because we've been so programmed to believe that we cannot do anything. Our limited beliefs, like you said right in the beginning, the limited beliefs are so programmed into us that we actually have to create or use some sort of physical or ritualistic medium between us and our own natural abilities to believe that it works. So sometimes when I'm working with my clients doing Reiki and tuning forks and everything, I've really started wondering now if it's the forks that are actually even doing anything, or if it's just me. Like I'm just psychic, but I have done enough work and I've done enough research with these items and with these methodologies that these are my wands. These are my tools that I can use to connect with my own natural psychic abilities. And I think that's why a lot of like debunking stuff and people trying to do the same thing and then it doesn't work for them, I think that's why it's there, because it's not actually really the forks. It's not really, you know, like, I mean, it is the energy flow and stuff, but it's really, I'm psychic. I'm doing psychic work on you. But I had to work so hard to create that way of connecting with my psychic abilities. And that's why different magic works for different people on different levels. And it brings us back around to the Gnosticism philosophy of you need to find a way to connect with the magic that makes sense to you. Not only makes sense in your brain, but also works on an emotional and like a heart connection as well. And that's why the Ghostbusters crossing the streams can kill a tumor for some people. That's why opening up my settings on my wrist can help me get over my cold. And that's why some people can perform miracles with tuning forks and some people can't. Some astrologers are crazy good and some people can't even make any sense of it. You know, we're stuck. We're in a weird place where we have to find these middlemen, these ways to get from our limited belief system to our natural inherent psychic abilities. And we just have to bridge that. A rainbow bridge, perhaps?
Hell yeah, man.
Hey, let's end there.
Dude, I want to end by saying this. If you are listening, you are psychic. Boom. Even if you weren't before, you're psychic now. Good job.
Yeah. You weren't before? You are now. Because you've used podcasts as your middleman.
We have just sanctioned it. So it's okay.
Yes. Thanks for having me on the show, Tim.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. I always have a blast talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Next time, clip episode?
Yeah. Maybe. Sounds good. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks, podcast family. Yeah. I'll hope you guys are enjoyed the show and we'll chat more in the
fall. Thanks for listening, everybody. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's Tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.